Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This show is brought to you by Miami Grill. For over 30 years, Miami Grill has brought you big favorites from big cities, featuring authentic ingredients prepared fresh to order with the best cheesesteaks, wings, gyros, burgers, and more. Don't just bring dinner home, bring home Miami. Order online or in person. Pickup, drive-thru, dine-in, and delivery available at all locations. If you're craving it, they're making it. Bringing Miami Grill home has never been easier. With locations all over South Florida, check MyMiamiGrill.com to find yours. That's MyMiamiGrill.com to find Miami Grill. This show is brought to you by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is a revolutionary new daily fantasy game whereby you pick 2, 3, or 4 players to go over or under their fantasy point projections, and if you're correct, you win. Pick 2 or more players from the same sport or league, or go cross leagues for your parlay. Use the promo code 5, that's F-I-V-E, 5, and receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. But first, sign up at prizepicks.com to start winning today.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. It's been a minute, and by a minute, I mean it's been a month. As always, we are brought to you by Biscayne Bay Brewing, the official beer of 5 Reasons Sports Network. And if you like the show and you support the show, and you want the show to go on, of course, please shave your balls. Manscaped, of course, they have the new Performance Package 4.0. Use 5RSN, 20% off your entire order. Chris, we started something.
We started something.
Yes, we did.
That's a trend.
It seems like you have some kind of breaking news that you just gave me right here.
Yeah, on the phone. Absolutely.
So tell the people what we're doing with this OnlyFans Patreon account.
Well, you know, we think it's just about time that we here at 3 Yards Per Carry have our own OnlyFans page, so so that you can get, you know, the latest pictures of us, you know, in odd situations. And but what we did actually is, for a long time we've talked about on this podcast, and listeners have mentioned to us on Twitter. We've talked about the WhatsApp chat that the three of us have been on for about 5 years now. I looked it up, and we kind of just text each other constantly, daily, you know, all things football players, videos, video clips, pictures, everything. And a lot of listeners like have always been like, man, I wish you could broadcast that, or I wish that you could somehow share that with us. So we decided to finally get on it, and so we're doing the WhatsApp chat on Discord now, and we're having people sign up through Patreon, and the Patreon page is going to be called OnlyFins, kind of a joke on the OnlyFans thing, and yeah, so you can sign up for $3 a month and get our WhatsApp chat feed, and like daily messages and, you know, everything that we talk about. But also this was really exciting, because like somebody, one of our subscribers was like, hey, why don't you do a chat room or a channel where the subscribers could talk to each other? And I sort of realized, okay, we got a lot of these people that are like pretty hardcore football people, right? I mean, you don't sign up with us unless you're pretty hardcore football people. Well, you know, they might get something out of talking to each other. So we started that, and now, of course, all the gears are turning. We're thinking of giveaways and things to do for our, we're like already getting neck deep in the whole Patreon thing. So I think that it's really cool. It's $3 a month, the OnlyFins on Patreon, and we just before hitting the record button reached 100 subscribers. So
that was awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, if you want to get on there, you got to go to patreon.com/onlyfins, onlyfins. Now you heard Chris. Guess who's also here? Simon, it's been a month. How are you, friend?
Good, good, thanks. I'm glad for the time off, frankly. So, but no, all good, all good. Hope you boys are well too.
Yeah, well, it's...
I mean, I know you're well because I speak to you every single day, so I don't even know why we're doing this. So, you know, we all know each other as well, so.
Yeah.
Yes, but we haven't heard each other's voices for a month. England's doing well. They're in the quarterfinal. Your football teams or your soccer teams, football. How they say
just,
it.
Just football. Is. Just say it. Football. It's really football. Easy.
Okay, your football teams seem to do a lot of winning, Simon. Does that ever get old? Does it become old hat? Do you just like wake up, that's another, you know, another quarterfinal in the UEFA? So
never.
Never. It never gets old, right?
No, winning never gets old.
Well, we're going to talk a lot about winning on this show. And unfortunately...
Is this a different podcast? Or did we change teams?
This is still 3 yards per carry, not 6 yards per carry.
Yeah. But we're going to talk a little bit about winning on this show. And we're going to start somewhere where it could lead to not winning, okay? Because the last time we speculated, but then it became official. And Xavier Howard didn't show up for minicamp. Or how they like to call it, mandatory OTAs. Mm-hmm. He didn't show up. And nobody really knows what he wants, but we know the particulars of his contract and what it kind of prohibits him from doing, which is he really can't sit out the season unless he really hates money. If he really wants to make a stand, he could just keep paying back the Dolphins somewhere around $800,000 a game for this season. I don't think he's going to do that, but there's something definitely going on there. It's not, I wouldn't say all is well and we should expect them for camp. Simon, what do you make of this?
I don't really care if I'm completely honest. I mean, he's going to show up and play or he's going to get traded. And if he gets traded, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if the Dolphins entered into a deal with him where they said, look, you signed this contract. We didn't. You signed it. You signed it 2 years ago. If you don't like it, tough shit. You know, there's still 3 more years to go. If you didn't like it, you shouldn't have signed it, you know. And I think they'll probably enter into some deal where they say, look, we're not going to pay you anymore because we've paid you a shitload of money anyway. But if you really want out, then play this season and we'll trade you to, you know, and you can pick the team that you end up going to pretty much after the season. I don't think there's any scenario where he sits out. It benefits nobody and it makes him look like a malignant. And I think he needs to play. You know, as good a player as he is, he's still got question marks with those knees and the injuries and, you know. So, and also he needs to back up a really good season because he's really not done that in the past. He's not had back-to-back brilliant seasons. You know, he's had a great season, then he struggled with injury. He's had another great season. Well, you know, what's it going to be this year? And it's not a particularly good pattern if he has, you know, if that inconsistency reigns where he either doesn't play or he's not ready to play. And ultimately, that lowers his trade value and that lowers the number of people that are going to be interested in him, especially if, you know, the Dolphins start disseminating information that all those knees, not what they used to be, which, you know, they'd be quite within their rights to do. So I think ultimately he plays. Whether or not he's a Miami Dolphin in 3 seasons' time, it's probably very unlikely. And it wouldn't surprise me if the Dolphins tried to get back in the first round with an extra pick in a really strong cornerback draft next year, depending on what happens with Noah Igbinoghene.
Good.
Yeah, I think that he's going to play. I disagree with Simon in one sense is that, you know, I do care because he was the best defensive player on the field last year. Those turnovers were a big reason why they won. That's one of the reasons we kind of fear the turnover regression that happens because I think the Dolphins forced a turnover in every single game last year. And he was a big part of the reason why that happened. He's a big deal for this team. So of course you care whether he's going to play. I just think from the start, the sense that I've always gotten both from him and the Miami Dolphins is that they're both very half-hearted about this. You know, he's not, you know, really forcing the issue like other players have in the past. the sort of players that actually do force themselves out of the organization. He's not been doing that. And at the same time, you know, the language and the way the Dolphins have treated it has not been like, if I think of like hard ass Jerry Jones being like, shut up and play, you know, and never in a million years are we going to redo this, you know, like he would take a hard stand, and the Dolphins have not. They've, you know, they've gone in public and they've said, well, they've acknowledged this is a unique situation and, you know, all these things. So I think that ultimately it's just going to get resolved, and it could be with, you know, finding some extra guaranteed money somewhere or doing something, you know, ornamental, just to make him feel like he got a win, you know, or maybe it does result in him asking for a trade. I think asking for a trade is really the worst case scenario. And I think he might do that, but even asking for a trade is like, okay, well, what if one doesn't materialize? Well, then he plays, and that's what's going to happen. So I'm not worried about it too much, because I know that they won't trade him. Chris Greer is going to trade him unless he gets like a nice haul, right? Mm. We know this about him as a trader by now, right? So if we do trade him, then I know that we got a haul for it. So that's kind of a good thing if we don't trade, but otherwise I don't think he's not playing this year. He's going to play. So I'm not too worried.
Well, that's the situation as of right now. But Simon, what do you think is going to happen?
I think he'll play. Okay. That's it. I think he'll play.
Yeah, I think I'm with you as well. I think that he'll play this season, maybe even disgruntled. And unfortunately, I think they're going to have to get, you know, 75 cents on the dollar. Unless, of course, you know, he repeats it. He goes out there and he gets 10 more picks. Then who knows? Maybe the Dolphins do get that haul. Maybe they get a frontline player and a first-round pick, which is ideally what you kind of want. Especially for a guy that's that expensive. Like, you're going to have to take something back, right? Like, there's not many teams that could just throw a $20 million cornerback onto their books.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, do you have an idea of how that could work?
No. But I do have to say this. I'm usually on the side of the player in this situation, getting paid more. I think the NFL maintains a lot of leverage over the players. And I think that they have to do what they can when they can. So in that sense, like, you know, this is opportunistic. He's coming off a ridiculous year. He's still young right now. He's coming off a healthy year. He needs to strike while this iron is hot. And that's what he's doing. So I understand that from the business sense, but from the Dolphins sense, like I don't come out on ultimately on his side on this. I think that we're only 1 year into that extension. And at the time that he signed the extension, it was not only the highest paid corner contract in the league, it was the highest defensive contract in all of the league. You know, you think about all the defensive players that were active at that point. His contract was better than every, you know, defensive contract on the books. And so, you know, we've only gotten 1 year into it. But why would you be redoing it already? I think that that's ultimately the Dolphins that's what their stance is going to be. But I do sense that that there's gonna, you know, this is not gonna be a trade. I don't think it's just so many things standing in the way of it being a trade. You know, this is ultimately like a relationship. They're gonna find some way to give him a win, and without really giving too much. And I think and then he's gonna play, and then maybe next year we revisit it and see what they can do with the salary cap and all that, but that's it.
Yeah, as far as some particulars, he fired his agent in February, which is Demaryius Bilbo. A lot of people think that Bilbo and the Dolphins have like an antagonistic relationship. I'm told that that's not the case. But he fired him and then hired David Cantor. I don't know if I can say the same. Simon, do you think that kind of – is he tipping his hand? Like, he's actually really going to go through with this by hiring old Dolphin antagonist David Cantor? Or is just window dressing? It's a threat.
I just think it's fan bullshit. I don't think the Dolphins give a fuck who his agent is. Okay. Like, agents are agents. They deal with GMs, and they've dealt with them historically for years, and it's not in a GM, it's not in an agent's, it's not in their best interest to piss off general managers, because you look at the people that work underneath that general manager, you're going to be dealing with this person all the time, and then you're going to be dealing with his underlings all the time, especially if they go on to be general managers. It just suits nobody. I just think it's the sort of nonsense that fans get really, you know, excited about, and it's absolute bullshit. It really doesn't matter.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how David Cantor fits in all this, but I do remember the Olivier Vernon saga.
It's their job. No. It's their job. Yeah. Their job is to get money for their client. Their job is not to patter cake the Dolphins, well, or the Brewers, or the Chicago Bulls, or whoever it is that they're. That's not their responsibility.
That's not quite fair, because David Cantor has really gone after the Dolphins in public on Twitter.
But good for him. I mean, I just don't care. I just think it's so overblown. I think when you drill down into it, and I just think it's, you know, people fall out all the time, but they have to deal with these guys all the time. I just don't buy that it's a thing. And I certainly don't buy that Xavier Howard has brought in an agent who hates the Dolphins, because that's just like internet mumbo jumbo. It's just not realistic in this. That just makes no sense. It's not like Demarius Bilbo and the Dolphins were particularly tight. You go back to the Jarvis Landry situation. No, yeah. You know.
Yeah, although I mean, that was smoothed over with the Xavier Howard contract, which now he hates.
Yeah, but go back to before the Xavier Howard contract. It wasn't smoothed over then.
No.
You know, I just think it's, this is like, it's overblown. So, and I don't for one second think that the Miami Dolphins star cornerback hired an agent who hates the Dolphins because he thinks it's going to, what does he think it's going to help him do?
Help him get him out of here.
But he doesn't need David Cantor to do that. Just don't turn up. You don't need an agent to do that. You just need some stones, which he clearly has. You don't need David Cantor to do that. That's you can hire any fucking agent to do that. You know, go and hire whoever. I just don't buy that. That's a thing.
Now,
it's an interesting talking point for, you know, but reality, I just don't, you know.
Now, as far as the player, and I think this part is interesting, I dug up an interview he did on the Man to Man podcast with Darius Butler. You guys know who he is, right?
I saw this interview too.
Yeah, and I found it odd. He seems to resent that they signed Byron Jones. Like, he doesn't want good players on his team. And then he took notice, quote unquote, I took notice when they drafted Noah Igbinoghene. Like, I don't get that. I thought the whole point was to get good players around you, and maybe those players help you. And if you look at the stats, and the numbers seem to bear that out, Byron Jones seemed to move those balls going the other way so he can pick them off. So I don't know. I don't understand Xavier Howard. Everything points to not for long as a Miami Dolphin, but maybe for this season.
Well, he couched it a lot. Like, I watched that interview too. And he brought up, I think he even brought up, or they brought up the Aaron Rodgers situation. It was within this context. They brought up the Aaron Rodgers situation drafting, what's his name? The kid that we liked at Jordan Utah Love. State, Jordan Love. They're asking, did you feel that when the Dolphins went and signed Byron Jones and then drafted, you know, Noah Igbinoghene? And he was like, I did. And he even used the term slap in the face. Mm-hmm. But before he said that, he was like, yeah, but I understand that they had to protect themselves because of my knee. Like, he said that. Like, he said, I understand they got to protect themselves because of my knee. But it was kind of like a slap in the face, and I was going to make them pay. I was going to make them pay by going out there and playing well. Well, you know what? That's exactly the attitude that you want players to have. I mean, you can't go out there every friggin' time that you're in front of the media and talk about how competition is great and competition brings out the best in the players. And, you know, we're all about having the players compete. And then not expect them to feel some kind of emotional way about giving them competition. This is what you're hoping to do. That's what produces the good play. is by getting them to feel that way, and to compete and to want to make the team pay for putting their job and, you know, up for competition, up in jeopardy. I mean, this is what you want. He did what you want, and he showed a very mature understanding that the Dolphins had to protect themselves because of his knee, and he knew it. So, you know, this is all just going. This is a stage play at this point, and it's not even a good one. It's not even a good play. It just feels phoned in, you know. And I don't think it's gonna, you know, amount to much.
Yeah. Although, you know, you could understand how fans could get a little bit nervous because there's more expectations this season than in any season in a while. And I have some stats to back that up, by the way. So, you know, and if you look at the defense, I would say it's powered mostly by those two guys outside, Byron Jones and Xavien Howard. Like, those two guys made it happen. It was a good idea to have two expensive cornerbacks, you know. So that, you know, people just get nervous. They see that and they want their Xavien Howard back playing with Byron Jones because they want to repeat what they did last year. Now, one thing I will say about this, and you talked about, and I gotta dig a little bit deeper into this. You were talking about like a regression to the mean as far as turnovers.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, you can find them throughout NFL history. Several, you know, coaches have good turnover ratios. You know, plus minus, right? But as far as creating turnovers, only Lovie Smith and his Bears, that seemed to be a feature of all his defenses. So we got to figure out why that is, because it hasn't shown up much since. You know, maybe that's just – and it's an anomaly. Maybe it's just him. Maybe it's just Lovie Smith and his defense has created turnovers. But that's going to be something that they're definitely going to need.
Well, I think they're a more talented defense. I think two things can be true at the same time in 2021, which is that they're a more talented defense. They're more sound in some areas than they probably were before. And yet they might not have the same year that they had last year. I mean, it's just both things can be true. And that's kind of where I'm leaning, what I'm expecting.
All right, Simon. Dolphins are projected, okay, and this is just a projection, but they're projected favorites in 10 games this season. Remember, there's 17 of them this year. Can you guess the last time the Dolphins were favored in 10 games in an NFL season? Because I looked this up.
1066.
Well, I only have information that goes back to 2003, so that's 17 years, and it's never happened. This is the first year, okay? The first year where they are actually favored in 10 games. In 2009, actually, they were favored in 9 games, okay? So I guess that was coming off of the 11-5 year. A lot of people thought that they were going to be pretty good. They weren't. I think, what did they go, 7-9 that season?
What was the expectations in 2017 after we made the playoffs in 2016 and –
It was yeah, seven.
I thought expectations were pretty good that year.
It was seven. Really?
Didn't they die out early on because Ryan got injured?
Ryan Tannehill got injured. Mm-hmm. And
Okay.
They were 7.5 was the over-under on wins. The win total was 7.5. And then it dumped after they signed Cutler. So Vegas was actually kind of prescient when that happened. I'm pretty sure we argued about it. Like, why are we, you know, losing half a game over Jay Cutler? Well, now we know. Yeah. So, Simon, the expectations game, do you get the sense that this is the season with the highest expectations in a very long time? At least in the data that I have, it's 17 years. But I guess we could go back to 2001, which is the last, like, legitimately good team that they had before, hypothetically, this one. Do you get the sense that there are more expectations this year?
Of course. I mean, it would be retarded to think anything other than that because twofold. One, the team hasn't been very good for 17 years, as we just pointed out. Two, you know, the deals that they've made have put them in a position to bring in players, whether that's free agents or draft picks. So therefore, you apply your own pressure by doing that, by ripping up and starting again and positioning yourself that way. And three, the world is different than it was 17 years ago. Social media is so much more prevalent. So there is so much more pressure that comes through those channels, whether that's Twitter, whether that's Instagram, whether that's Facebook, whether that's podcasts, whether that's 24-hour news, you know, The Athletic, all those sorts of things. There are more and more and more, you know, ESPN, all the sorts of traditional media as well that are now pumping out, you know, the NFL Network exists, you know, to a completely different level than it did 17 years ago. So yes, of course there's pressure. Of course there's more pressure. I mean, that's an absolute given. You know, this team is now in a position where it's going to have to make a run over the next 3 or 4 years because this window is now beginning to open and they've got to take advantage of that. And if they don't, then we know what's going to happen and it will be rinse and repeat as it has been for the last 17 years, except with a new staff. So of course there's more pressure.
Chris, expectations? Do you feel as if, like, you know, they're elevated? Like you're expecting something and you would be disappointed if they don't achieve it?
I mean, there's a difference between what Dolphins fans expected and what the Dolphins are expecting, what the national, you know, people are expecting. Because I think nationally, you know, sometimes when, you know, there's not a lot of love for the Dolphins, certainly not Tua, among national media. And so that might be really dampening expectations nationally. But certainly locally, the expectations are high. They should be high. Now is the time. It's, you know, there's no rebuild anymore. There's no, you know, this is it. What I can say is, and that I have consistently heard from multiple places, is that inside that building there's more pressure than there's been, and that you know, this is obviously probably the highest expectations Steve Ross has had since somebody else was coaching, and so they are expecting wins, they are expecting playoffs, and if they don't get that, that will be a failure to them. There will be answers that will need to be had if they don't make the playoffs. So, yeah, there are definitely expectations inside the organization that weren't there in a lot of previous years. Even there in 2016, Adam Gase's first year, when they did actually go 10-6 and make the playoffs. But then I think the expectations started to ratchet until Tannehill went down in 2017. And then expectations got higher in 2018, even though I think some other people saw a disaster on the horizon. Yeah, so definitely, I think the obvious is the obvious.
Yeah, I look at this team and, you know, I it's almost like, you know, because the Dolphin fan, especially on Twitter, is constantly waiting for a piano to fall on their head. And you can't blame them because a piano has consistently fallen on their head for the last 20 years, right?
Yeah, we get a lot of pianos.
Yeah. So I look at this team and I can make a case for being happy at every single position except running back, of course. Okay. And we all have our theories. I think we settled on that they probably screwed up on draft day, right? Like, I think we settled on that. Like, they tried to get their guy, but they couldn't. So, you know,
I don't know. I don't know if I'd say screw up. I think that's strong language. I think just because they tried doesn't mean that they really thought they had it and then were disappointed that, you know, oh my God, we were expecting to be able to do this and now we can't. I think they took that chance, you know, they knew what they were doing. They knew what they were going to try to do. They tried to do it knowing that it might not work. And
it's possible that they gambled and lost.
No, it's possible that if they really wanted it, they would have done it. They had the power to do it and they didn't deem it necessary. And that's
they could have upped the offer.
Exactly. And they had the weaponry to do it with and they didn't. And that tells you all you need to know. Because if they really desperately wanted it, they would have done it regardless, because no team has as much capital as they do, and they didn't. So that tells you everything.
Yeah, because if you got to think, some teams have different boards than what most people are used to. Like, most people look at the draft and think, okay, at running back, a team has 25 guys that they're willing to draft. It usually doesn't work that way. Sometimes a team has three or two guys that they're willing to draft at a position. And who knows if at running back, you know, they took Jared Doakes in the seventh round because it was an opportunity. Somebody piped up, and we already said that, you know, maybe they have the interns make the picks past the fourth round. But it's entirely possible that they had Najee Harris and Travis Etienne. Both are gone, and they went back-to-back, if I'm correct. And then they said, you know what, to hell with it. And that's it. We're done. We're out of the running back business, at least for this draft. So, you know,
They were not feeling urgent about Javonte Williams. I know that.
It didn't seem that way.
Yeah.
So,
because, again, as Simon's point is the point. If they were, it would have happened.
Yeah. they had the ammunition to do it. You know, it wasn't like they had one pick in each round. No, they had several. So I guess we could close here. Simon, what are the strengths? Because next week we start breaking down the entire roster leading up into training camp, which starts on July 27th, which I will be at. So, Simon, what are the strengths and what are the weaknesses on this team as you see it as of right now?
I mean, they're the same that they were when we did it 4 weeks ago. I mean, the strengths is, I mean, it's impossible to say right now because nothing's happened. You know, you can't define what strengths are. You know, you could say quarterback is a strength. You could say receiver is a strength. It looks a strength. But, you know, if somebody gets injured, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if a couple of guys got traded. You know, I can't see Jakeem Grant. I potentially can't see Preston Williams making the team. They might trade Parker. Tight end looks a strength. You know, offensive line has work to do. Quarterback has work to do. Defensive line, yeah, okay. Linebacker, you know, there's an issue with regards how it's going to work without your man whose name has completely escaped me because it's half midnight, who's gone back to New England, Carl Van Noy. Secondary looks a strength, but obviously, you know, it's up in the air with Howard. So, you know, I'd say the biggest strength is the kicker. That's them, you know, he's the best player on the team, pretty much.
Yeah, I think that they're, at least from what I got from OTAs, they're sleeker. Like, you could tell that there was a talent infusion on this team, especially on the offensive end. Like, there is talent on this team. Waddle and Fuller alone give this team a pretty strong look on the skill position side. And, of course, Hunter Long, we've talked about him. He's only been running around in his underwear. So, you know, everybody has to relax a little bit. But he has fans. Hunter Long has fans. And Gesicki also looks sleeker and faster, bigger, stronger. He also looked different than he did last year. He looked thinner last year. So
I think these guys have had more of an off season, right? I mean, we should expect that. They are because they've had that full off season. I think that they're going to come in better shape and looking good. But you know, I think you said it with the pass catchers. I'm stupefied with the pass catchers. The makeover that they gave that unit this year or this off season, you know, normally you get a Will Fuller. And if you've actually watched his all 22 and tracked how he played this last year, he was really, really good. One of the very top wide receivers in the league, in my opinion.
Yeah.
When he played, you know, people compare it to the Mike Wallace thing. And I think he's a better player than Mike Wallace was. When Mike Wallace came to the Dolphins, you get that, just that guy just totally transfigures your position, right? From top to bottom, you know, shoves everybody down a rung. Suddenly you're number two last year is now your number three and so on and so forth. To get him and then the sixth overall pick, Jaylen Waddle, you know, a guy that other teams also felt was an elite player, elite level wide receiver prospect. In one offseason, that's just monstrous. I mean, we've never seen that in our entire history watching the Miami Dolphins. Certainly not at that position anyway.
And, yeah, the last time I could remember an overhaul like that was when Shula decided, you know what, that's enough with the Marx brothers. They've, you know, they're up in age. Mm-hmm. And they went and they got Urban Fryer and Mark Ingram in one off season and drafted OJ McDuffie.
Yeah.
You know, like that was, it's that type of makeover.
Yeah. I mean, it's that type of makeover, probably even, probably even better, more impactful, in my opinion. You know, and so I think, you know, strap in, because we're talking about Tua all the time. And the tight end position, obviously, as well, you mentioned Hunter Long. They've still got good tight ends from last year. They've got Mike Gesicki, who is being recognized by the best tight ends in the league as one of the best tight ends in the league. So kudos to him.
He was teaching drills at Kelsey's camp.
Was he? Yes. Well, I mean, that's the respect. I mean,
Kelsey made him a coach at his camp.
The best tight ends in the league are like out there watching the tight ends and being like, yeah, Mike Gesicki's top five. You know, he's I think that means something. So you look at him in with the pass catchers. It's phenomenal. We keep talking about Tua. We're talking about him way too much, because it's like, oh, is Tua going to take the next step? Is he going to explode? Is he going to arrive on the scene? This is going to be his year. That's not the story, man. That's just not the story, because even if he does pretty well, you know, I doubt that he's suddenly Russell Wilson, you know, because Russell Wilson wasn't even necessarily Russell Wilson until a certain point in his career. I think that Tua is going to continue developing, and yeah, he's going to be better this year. Of course, he's got a full off season. He's gotten stronger and, you know, and so on and so forth, but that's not the story. I mean, the story is look what they put around him. Mm-hmm. You can't guard Mike Gesicki the way you would have last year when you also have Will Fuller and Jaylen Waddle on the team. It doesn't work. You know, it the X's and O's don't, there's not a way to draw that up and defend Mike Gesicki the same way. You know, so I think that there's going to be a lot to be had this year, and it's not going to necessarily be like, you know, oh, Tua turned into Drew Brees. You know, well, no, he's distributing the ball to a lot of players that are really talented, really fast. And that's what I think I would expect this year.
Yeah, I like all the fluff stories that are coming out right now, how Tua is picking up the playbook and some other guys are not picking up the playbook, but it's really diverse. And I'm really interested in seeing, you know, what kind of team they're going to be, because they have 5,000 tight ends on the roster. But if you look at the team, you know, on the surface, it looks like an 11 personnel team. It looks like they're going to have 3 wide receivers on the field. And why wouldn't you at all times? Right. Absolutely. So, you know, well, next week we will start breaking down some of these camp battles, and there are going to be some interesting ones. If you start digging into the team, especially on defense, like, they could go a bunch of different ways as far as who gets to play and which personnel sets. We'll start breaking that down starting next week. That's it. There is no more. This was our return. You get us for the next 8 months, people. So enjoy the first one.
Oh, one thing. We're up just while we were recording this. We got up to 106. We went from 100 to 106.
One time I looked at it and it said 102. So in other words, if we stay on the air for like the next 2-3 weeks straight.
Yeah, why don't we just
I might be able to get my beach house in the Keys, huh?
We're just gonna marathon this and have you all keep signing up.
All right, that's it. There is no more. Talk to you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.